Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. During the Cold War, Washington's policy on Europe was to keep the Russians out, the Americans in, and the Germans down. In many respects, the same policy remains in play today. But the Germans now may have some different ideas. And how's that isolating Russia plan going? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, Martin Jay in Marrakesh. He's an award-winning journalist and commentator. And in Budapest, we have George Samueli. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with George in Budapest. It's quite interesting to me, George, because of the situation in Ukraine. The whole German question has arisen again, okay? And so if I count the decades, this is a 100-year-plus problem, the German question. The Germans are not doing enough. The Germans are being too assertive. The Germans thinking more about themselves. They want to expand the European Union. No matter what comes out of the Chancellor's office of Sergeant Schultz, somebody's got some gripe with it. It's really quite interesting, and I don't think it's gotten nearly enough coverage that it deserves. Your thoughts?
No, you're right, Peter. And what's really troubling is the mounting hysteria in Germany, because this is a country that obviously is a very talented country, but it's prone to hysteria. It was prone to hysteria about Russia in particular before World War I, and again about Russia before World War II. And something of the sort is reemerging today with Sergeant Schultz, as you put it. The other day, he went to the Bundeswehr, and he told them that as the most popular nation with the greatest economic power as a country in the middle of a continent, our army must become the cornerstone of defense in Europe. No one really paid much attention to this. Germany will be the key military power in Europe, largely because, NATO, great. And if it's for NATO, everyone's for it. And people still imagine that the Germans are like the sort of vaguely kind of peacenik, pacifist types that we remember from the 70s and 80s. But that doesn't mean that just because that's the way they were in the 70s and 80s, doesn't mean that that's the way they're always going to be. They are now openly saying that we need to prepare for a conflict with Russia. Schultz said this. We need to prepare for a conflict with Russia. And again, no one pays any attention to this. And, then Annalena Baerbock, Ursula von der Leyen, they're all talking about Europe must unite against Russia. And Europe has to unite under German auspices. They're saying we are the biggest, the strongest power in Europe, has to unite under our auspices.
But that's the rub, Martin. And that was the question I was going to ask. George preempted me, as he usually does here at the very end. Because the way that Schultz talks and other German officials, I sometimes wonder where Germany begins and the EU ends and vice versa. Claiming that Germany will spend 100 billion euro on rearmament. The 20th century wasn't that long ago, Martin. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I'm going to throw caution to the wind here. I don't think €100 billion is that much money when talking about military spending. You've got to remember a couple of things. First of all, the military side of Germany was underfinanced for a very long time. It's also quite chaotic. So there's a lot of catching up to do. Also, they sent a lot of their kit to Ukraine. So like France, they're very much under-resourced when it comes to their own military. I think the real worry, the real paranoia, I mean, George really made me laugh when he talked about hysteria. I worked for German TV for 10 years. I know about German hysteria. Don't get me started on that. The real hysteria is there are no good final outcomes for Germany in the Ukraine war because they are worried that Putin will look for someone to blame if things get worse. And what Germany's trying to do is contribute to the Ukrainian efforts, but not be a big player. So that's why they've just recently held back sending big guns, which the Ukrainians are really pissed off about. They're also dragging their feet about so-called Leopard tanks, which may or may not materialize. You know, Germany does not want to be identified as the key deal breaker in the conflict because it's afraid that Russia will hit Germany. And this is what part of this Zeitenwende moment that Corporal Schultz, you make him a sergeant, I think you give him great credit. Corporal Schultz said in the parliament where he got all the deputies roaring, you know, for the first time in probably 30 years, you know, a leader in Germany actually could say to the parliament, we need to spend much more money on military spending. And not everybody went, oh, no, we really should think about that. I mean, let's look at history, you know, are we going to go?
I would agree with you that it's a low baseline. However, given history, I have to be delicate here, given history, once the Germans put their mind to something, it tends to take on a life of its own here. And yeah, particularly the hysteria, and I think that's a good word, the hysteria about what's going on in Ukraine, which should have been very avoidable. But this is a kind of a vector where we see where the Germany and the EU are synonymous. I mean, the Deutschmark everybody adored in Germany, and they accepted the EU, the euro, because it was a replacement for the Deutschmark. And so, you know, this is essentially a pro-German agenda with expansion. Well, obviously, these are for German goods to go to. I mean, this is a pattern from the 20th century before the First and Second World War. Go ahead.
Yes, it is. And it's very interesting that Germany is now pushing for this expansion of the EU. And while the Germans are aware that it's not going to be easy to get any countries into the EU, nonetheless, they can create a kind of a de facto EU, you know, just by having association agreements and so on. So now they're pushing for Georgia and Moldova to be inside the EU. Why are they doing this? Well, other than that, Georgia and Moldova are very useful as a weapon against Russia. Everything that, you know, Sergeant Schultz said was about how do we mobilize against Russia? You know, Russia is the other. You know, this is, you know, our values are alien to Vladimir Putin because he was projecting onto Putin. Putin is defining himself in opposition to the EU and NATO, rather than that we Europeans under German leadership are defining ourselves in opposition to Russia.
George, we've heard this before.
Exactly. That's why it's so striking that there's this kind of talk, which is very different from the talk in Germany in the 1970s. This is much the old style Germany. And again, you have to go back to 1990, when there were a lot of people concerned about German reunification, including the United Kingdom and France. And Chancellor Helmut Kohl, he wrote a letter to all of the leaders of the world and said, henceforth, only peace will emanate from German soil. And I guess people were reassured sort of by that. And of course, a few months later, Germany went ahead and recognized Croatia and Slovenia. But this is the way Germany's quite clever in the way it plays the game. I mean, it wants to present itself on the one hand as we are the leaders of Europe, you know, what we say goes. On the other, well, you know, we have a historic responsibility and we're very troubled about our past and we don't like war. And really, we got to, you know, we don't want to send these particular weapons, but they do send these weapons. They are getting involved in Ukraine. And despite all the historic precedents, they are very actively involved in Ukraine and training Ukrainians. I mean, in other words, going back to the 1940s when they're actually actively training Ukrainians.
Well, and also, I just as a sidebar here, Poland is suing Germany for reparations for the Second World War. That's a separate topic. But Martin, the fly in the ointment of all this, I think, you know, what we've said here is patently true. But what does Washington think of all of this? You know, having a strong Germany is okay to a certain extent, as long as Germany doesn't challenge American hegemony in Europe. And this whole situation with Ukraine has solidified American hegemony at the expense of the Europeans, which of course we all know that. But so this Germany's angling for repositioning itself in Europe, it still has to be under the auspices of Washington's control. Thoughts?
Well, does it? I mean, I was in Afghanistan in 2008, and a French general there told me the big thinking from France was to create a European pillar within NATO. And I wonder whether Germany's initiative now to soldier ahead, forgive the pun, with a new military spending bonanza, you know, of $100 billion one shot and about $70 billion a year, which is more or less in line with Britain and France. I wonder whether this is a way of signaling to America, look, we are going to go ahead. We are going to build this huge army. Probably a few other member states will join us in any excursions around the world that we like to get involved in. You know, a bit of dabbling in a few conflicts in the Middle East, maybe a bit of a few boat patrols off the coast of Libya, the odd conflict in Africa, you know, the sort of thing. Is Germany forming by default an EU army? Because the Federalists in Brussels, I was there for 10 years, it was pretty boring, I can tell you. But for 10 years, all I heard was over and over again, you know, we need an EU army. And Macron has pushed this since Ukraine. The Europeans can't form an EU army. They can't decide on budget. They can't decide on who runs it. Is it some bureaucrat in Brussels? You're giggling, I can see. It's hilarious. Or is it a member state? You know, the Germans, I think, by default, by going ahead with this plan, are probably signaling that, hey, we can have an EU army, but it will be an informal one led by the Germans for doing their peacekeeping or humanitarian work around the world. And there'll be a few people who join it, like the Romanians have indicated they would, possibly Italians, Spanish, and maybe the French as well. And it will be called an EU army by default, but it won't be a Brussels EU army. It'll be one led by Germany, which is the horror of all nightmares of Brussels for the last 30 years. You know, can we have an EU army which isn't led by Germany? You know, and it's also a nightmare, don't forget, for the German people. A lot of people in Germany are really uncomfortable about any kind of strong military force around the world, you know, throwing its weight around. And when I was in Afghanistan, I spent a day with the German army on the Tajikistan-Afghanistan border. And, you know, the general up there started talking to me about, you know, maybe Germany at one point in the future doing its own thing around the world with these ventures. You know, so we've got all this to look forward to. My guess is that Germany will forge ahead with a so-called EU army, which is going to cause all sorts of problems politically within Europe. It's going to cause problems with the Americans, because then, you know, what do we do about NATO? Does that still have its clout, its influence around the world with Europeans on board? You know, and I would put a wager that with the next conflict that this so-called new EU army gets involved in, the Brussels will step up the last moment and convince the Germans to put an EU armband on all the soldiers there and call it an EU army anyway.
Right. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real new stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the home edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. All right, let's go back to George in Budapest here. Would you like to react to what Martin had to say before we went to the break?
Well, I think that it's going to be a delegation of responsibilities. I think the Americans will be quite happy to see Germany run the European branch of NATO, and as part of a kind of global NATO, which I think is what the United States would like to create, the Americans will focus on the Far East as part of a containment of China. America can't be everywhere at all times. So I think that's why I think Germany will be very useful as America's loyal lieutenant in Europe. But it's interestingly, it's kind of the Soviet nightmare from the 1960s, which is they were always suspected that somehow once Germany becomes rearmed, it basically will take over NATO and will get paid, you know, essentially Americans will be doing Germany's bidding. I think Germans will be doing America's bidding, or some combination of the two.
But Martin, I mean, history still intrudes here. I mean, like I mentioned, this is a sidebar. Poland is suing Germany for reparations of the Second World War. And then when we hear that Germany may be putting some tank battalions in the Baltic republics, I mean, those of us that know history, it's like, wow, it didn't take that long for that a certain pattern to repeat itself here. It's not having a European army run by the Germans is there's a lot of people swallowing very hard, okay? I mean, there are still some people still alive remembering that conflict. I don't think you can do the facelift that easy. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I think the real worry is that we go over this line of simply humanitarian work or aid work around the world, and we start getting to more serious conflicts. I mean, the point that George made about Americans and NATO in China, the Germans want to be there as well. They want to be in right next to Taiwan as well. They've indicated that. And so this starts to, you know, ring alarm bells. But when we talk about Russia, you know, we shouldn't forget the history. We shouldn't forget that most politicians of Schultz era still have a huge, huge complex about what happened in Russia. They got their asses kicked. I mean, really kicked, in not just in Stalingrad, but before in Moscow as well. You know, I've watched the World at War series, BBC. It's very good. So I think we should also remember that I think the German elite keep changing their minds. They keep jumping about all over the place. One minute they want to be gung-ho. Next minute they want to sort of retract, and they don't really know how to handle the situation. I think the real worry, you know, is that this coalition government, which is incredibly inexperienced, which has Greens who seem to be banging the war drum, the same Greens who in the 80s campaigned against NATO, campaigned against the German army expanding. You know, now they're the ones who want to bomb the hell out of Ukraine. There's a lot of confusion. And I think we need sobriety when we talk about Germany. And I don't know where that comes from, but let's see how things pan out. I think there will be a certain restraint on the German side in the coming weeks when we see the next move by Putin in Ukraine. You know, I don't see Germans as the warmongers, as the ones really championing any conflict, as we worry. They don't have a good history on that, even recently. They still, you know, one of the things that's not mentioned about German military complex is it's really badly organized and there's a lot of corruption. You know, so whatever we expect to happen isn't going to happen very quickly when we talk about Ukraine, when we talk about arming anything around the world. I think the European Union is going to step in. I think there's going to be a huge debate now in the European Parliament. Don't laugh. The only parliament in the world that doesn't propose draft legislation. You know, it's a Disney world. I think we're going to have a debate in Brussels, and I think you are going to see the emergence of some sort of EU army, probably with Germany leading, because Germany will always argue, well, hey, we put the most money into the pot, you know, and that's always been their argument, you know, and it'll be the same. And I think that's the reason why they've come up with this magic number of 100 billion. And we're going beyond the 2% national GDP budget because, you know, there is a signal there to other member states. Hey, if you do the same thing, then you could become part of our club. And, you know, we've got a few ideas about places we'd like to go in the world, you know, and maybe even the French would like to turn to the Germans and say, hey, we've got some real problems in some of our ex-colonies in France who've kicked us out. Like Mali, you know, perhaps you could help with that. You can see the picture, can't you? Let's just look where Russia has filled the vacuum in Africa, and you can see where German planners, you know. I mean, there was a report in the German parliament about 2 or 3 years ago, I wrote about it, which said we must do more independently around the world with our military. That should be worrying to a lot of your viewers.
Yeah, I remember the Africa Corps, and so does George. Okay. All right, I want to switch gears here a little bit. The reaction, the Western reaction to Russia's special military operation in Ukraine was to, you know, two things: break the back of the Russian economy and isolate Russia on the global stage. Well, number one, the economy is took an initial hit, but it's absorbed the sanctions. I can tell our audience here, most Russians are not aware of sanctions on their country. Okay, that's how, you know, people feel it. Second one, isolating Russia on the global stage. That's not working out too well. Also, George, the global South has basically shrugged it off as a European problem. Even if you look at some of the major countries in the global South, they're actually saying, well, but you, the West, you created this, you fix it. Why should we get on board? And because Europe has gone down this idiotic energy policy. I mean, it's just psychotic as far as I can see, okay? And everyone, we'll take the largesse, we'll take the slack, why not? Cheap energy made you rich, it's gonna make us rich here. So Vladimir Putin, his foreign minister, Lavrov, they have plenty of people to meet. And, you know, as we have this General Assembly, the United Nations General Assembly, a lot of people wanna talk to the Russians. Guess that plan of isolation, this isn't working. George.
But it is quite remarkable that this Russia that is demonized, you know, we talk about the hysteria in Germany, but it's a hysteria throughout Europe and the United States. And every media story you read, Russia is isolated, Putin facing increasing diplomatic isolation. So he goes to Samarkand, and then he has meetings with Modi, very warm meeting. He has a meeting with Xi Jinping, again, very warm. And they're all talking about cooperation, all the different projects that they're going to be working on, you know, the trade agreements that they're going to sign. There's just no hint of anything in their attitude towards Russia to the Western attitude toward Russia. And that's why, you know, you really feel that the West is just completely living in its own delusional world and not realizing that the rest of the world, you know, this is, you know, the most populous nations of the world, do not look upon Russia and Ukraine in the way that the Western countries do. They have a lot of sympathy for Russia. You know, they may have concerns, and Putin acknowledged that they have concerns. I mean, obviously, everyone has concerns about a war that's dragging on, you know, seemingly inconclusively. But they regard Russia as a partner. And that's something that, you know, the West has completely failed to take on board. And it is really the result of a longstanding Soviet and then Russian diplomacy that they have built very solid relations with many of the emerging countries in the world.
You know, Martin, it's interesting. I mean, obviously, the conflict in Ukraine is front and center. It's the vector in which everyone decides pro, against, condemn, whatever. But I look at it in a much kind of broader sense, is that there's a rejection of this rules-based order, which I have no idea what that means. No one really does. And I would just say, go even further, Western, quote unquote, Western values and culture, it's more and more alien to most of the world. This wokeism, this postmodernism, this is something that most people in the world can't make heads or tails of. Maybe they'll see it on Netflix and kind of chuckle, but that's something that most of the world has no interest in embracing at all. And it's identified with the West. The West is very alien to most of the world.
Yeah, and I think the real worry is that people around the world cotton on to how fake this whole ideology has become. People in Western countries don't even believe anymore in those Western values. I mean, just in the last few days in Britain, I've been shocked to see on social media the number of people who have been arrested for protesting at the Queen's funeral, sometimes just with a white piece of paper saying, "Not my king." You know, we're becoming totalitarian states in the West, and it's step by step, millimeter by millimeter, you know, salami slice by salami slice, it's happening. And so it's very, very difficult for people to take the Ukraine war seriously if we keep on banging on this drum about democracy and Western values, and, you know, particularly when we're funding to a large extent neo-Nazi groups to do some really awful work there. You know? And, you know, the media has just become so polarized, and so it just emits, you know, the media now just emits the stories that it doesn't want to run, which conflict with its narrative, and run the stories that it does want to run. Just yesterday, we saw reports on France 24 of this huge mass grave supposedly discovered by Ukrainian soldiers. But if you dig a little bit deeper and look into it, it actually wasn't a mass grave. It was a graveyard, you know, where people were buried in coffins. And, you know, names were put on crosses, and, you know, and but, you know, a few Western journalists were invited along to film it and to dish out the moral tutelage to us all, you know. And I wonder how long this is going to last. I wonder how long, you know, people are actually going to swallow all this nonsense. We've got a G20 meeting coming up very soon, which I suspect Putin will attend, but most Western leaders will not attend themselves. They'll send dignitaries or envoys or whatever, you know. This, in the middle of people dropping dead, freezing to death in the UK, for example, during winter, I think, you know, media, I can see in Britain, is already turning. They're now asking some harder and harder questions. They're now saying, you know, what is really the justification of this war? You know, just recently, a British tabloid ran a huge page where it compared all the sanctions that we impose on Russia, but the Russians were having cheaper food, cheaper energy, you know, and people are boasting on social media they're running hot baths all day long, you know. And in Britain, you know, we've literally almost become a third world country. It's not a joke. You know, people can't afford to eat anymore. And this slogan on social media, heat or eat, is going to be a hashtag very soon if it isn't already. you know, and people are going to start asking more and more questions. And when we boycott that G20 meeting, I think there's going to be a turnaround in Western opinion, you know, because that's just so juvenile.
And on this program, we always ask questions here. That's why people watch us. All right, we've run out of time. I want to thank my guests in Marrakesh and in Budapest. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RTC. Next time, remember, cross that bridge.